everybody, and welcome to episode 38 of Magic FM. I'm Gabby Sparks, one of your hosts today, and I'm joined by Mashi Scanlon. As always, Mashi, welcome.
Hey, Gabby, how's it going?
I'm good. Thanks for asking. We have...
You know, I realized...
go ahead.
We talked about all this stuff. We talked about all this stuff in the run-up to the show, and I don't even know, like, what are you playing right now? Is there a cube active? Like, what Magic are you actually playing right now?
There's been Vintage Cube for the last month, and it's been great. That's all I've been doing. I've only been cubing. It's been awesome.
I need to start doing that. I am like donating. I should just cut a check directly to Wizards of the Coast because I am donating gems plentiful in M21 drafts.
Mashi,
I'm spewing.
You just have to word it better. You are giving back to the community.
And how? Like, I just, what's happening now too is I'll get a deck that I think is good, and then I'll go like 2-3, and then I'll rage immediately, draft again, and then that deck is awful. And so I've actually said, like, you know what, there's some bannings in Historic, I need to start playing Historic. I need to back away from Limited because I've just been drafting too much and not doing well.
That's great. I mean, it happens. It's okay as long as you're having fun.
Totally.
It has been so nice because Vintage Cube has been up for a month. This is usually what we call like Christmas in July. This is the time, the only other time of year that the Vintage Cube is usually out. However, because of COVID, there was a whole period of time where we had Cube like a couple of months ago, I want to say. But it's been so fun because we have this little Discord group of a bunch of my friends here in Denver and BK, who loves cubing. And so what we've been doing is after work, we'll get on this Discord and then BK will draft and we'll be birding his draft. And so we get to kind of be like the peanut gallery and decide what he's drafting and tell him his picks and figure out how we're playing. And so we'll just do that a lot of times in the evenings. And it's amazing because BK has become like the MacGyver of like MacGruber of of Q. Because he's seriously, yeah. He just trophies with decks that seem completely unplayable. And it feels like he's just cubed so much that every time he's just trying to like chase that new high, he's like trying to get what is a worst deck that I can still trophy with. He's up to like 20 trophies, I think. It's much.
People don't understand how good, I mean, I know you do, but BK is like a platinum level pro. He qualified for the MPL. He ended up not doing it. Like, he is a top rate Magic player, right? So he can do stuff like that. I will say this, Harkin, there's a CFP Pro article right now. I don't know if you saw this, that Frank Carson wrote, which was like M21 limited accomplishments, like the checklist of things you want to try to accomplish.
Like a bingo card, kind of?
Yeah, and this is kind of like it feels like what you're describing is BK doing the same thing with the Vintage Cube.
So much. I mean, seriously, it's just it's like with a piece of string and this rope and, you know, this used, you know, like piece of paper, we're going to get a trophy.
Yeah.
we've been doing a lot of like cubing where either Luis will be the one that's cubing or BK will be the one that's cubing, and we're all kind of just like heckling them as they play. It's been really fun. We've really enjoyed having the Vintage Cube around.
What's the best deck you've seen cubed?
Oh my god! I mean,
that you've cubed?
No, I think the question I think is, what's the worst cube you saw win? Because really, it's just some horrible decks that can't ever win. Like BK was playing a deck where MC the Warrens is usually not very good in cube because you just have to like take your entire turn to actually like make the goblins, and then the next turn you attack. It's really hard to give him haste. But BK was playing some heinous deck where he could Finale of Devastation for like a ton of mana because he had Heartbeat of Spring and Mana Flare and all these like effects that double your mana. So he was tripling his mana every turn so that he could Storm to make a bunch of goblins and then use Finale to give them Trample and pump them up. And he had one game where he attacked for like 1500 or something. Like, it was just outrageous.
Oh my god. this is the most frustrating things. Like, I was talking to Kevin Amami, who I work with, you know, he's like the sales director at Channel Fireball, about some stuff that happened. No one wants to hear the bad beat stories. I get it. But when it's bad mana in a limited format, now Vintage Cube is different because there's dual lands and stuff.
Yeah, it's closer to constructed.
Where he got blown out by a four-color deck in M21. And that's just like it's not a format where you should be playing four-color decks.
Yeah. Was it like a shrine deck?
No, what? That's
the thing
about it. I was like, when you try to, no, it was like, second turn, it was like Lore Scale Quaddle into Spell Gorger Weird. I'm like, wait a minute, that's already three colors. He's like, oh, it gets worse. And then he died on like turn 5. And he was like, I couldn't believe it happened to me. And I was
that's
just like,
really funny.
You got it. You got it. Yeah.
It's like, you got me. What am I going to do? I can't do anything.
Exactly.
That's really funny.
I mean, I had a game where someone played Teferi. I go, Faith's Fetters. They go, ha ha. They blew up the Faith's Fetters. I go, ha ha ha. Here's another Faith's Fetters. And I'm about to win. And they go, you know what? I'll play Ugin. I'm like, well, you had Teferi and Ugin in your draft deck. Go away.
What about
go
all the
away.
Faith's Fetters?
Yeah, I only had two.
Faith's Fetters is a good card. Yeah.
Faith's Fetters is awesome.
That's really funny.
I could not believe it. So.
Well, speaking about BK, I thought we could do a shout out for Channel Fireball, sponsor of the podcast. And I think one of the things that maybe we could shout out this episode is some of the podcasts in the CFB podcast network. And I think there's there's some really cool podcasts, and maybe you don't know about all of them. So we can give our fellow podcasters a shout out. If you enjoy this podcast, you might enjoy theirs too. So there was a new launch. It happened this Monday. It is Constructed Resources. Hooray.
Awesome.
Super exciting.
That's unbelievable.
Yeah. Super exciting. So this is the third reboot. Third reboot of Constructed Resources. There's been two previous co-hosts, and like the episodes never really went. I don't think they ever went over like 30 or something.
Yeah.
So this is a brand new reboot, episode one. The co-hosts are Andrew Beckstrom. We were just talking about BK right now with the Loose Cube Resources, and Luis Scott Vargas. Luis, obviously, he's a fantastic player, one of the best players to ever play the game. And every week it's kind of like a counterpart to LR, in the same way that people listen to LR to level up their limited game. You listen to Constructed Resources to level up your constructed game.
I think that, just because the Monday Meta, which is another podcast we have that I'm lucky enough to do with Martin Yuza, I've been listening to like all the constructed podcasts out there, Arena Decklists and Midweek Metagame, and just trying to consume that content to be ready for the Monday Meta when it goes up. And I couldn't be more excited about Constructed Resources, right? Again, I've already said this, but BK is such an underrated player. Like, people just don't, he doesn't have the name recognition of a Luis. I mean, no one has really the name recognition of a Luis Scott Vargas, but other top pros, he doesn't have that same name recognition, but he's so good.
He's
very dry and funny. That's the thing about it. He's very dry and he's very funny. And so I haven't listened to the first episode yet. I'm super excited, not just for the content, because I know that they have this rapport from doing Eternal coverage together, but really kind of getting to hear the barbs going back and forth between BK and
Luis. Yeah, so it's always Luis daggering BK, and BK just like being a good sport and rolling with the punches. But they are very good friends. We all live here in Denver. BK and I have been friends for forever. I talk about BK on the podcast all the time. So it's actually really cool because they have this like awesome chemistry already, both from testing and, you know, Magic teams together, having done coverage before. And now they're doing this podcast. So I listened to the first episode because I'm the producer. I was recording it and stuff for them. And, Mushy, I feel like I learned a lot about what's going on in Standard, which I was completely in the dark. Like, I had no idea what was going on in Standard because I hadn't played in so long. I've just been playing Cube. So, yeah, I very much recommend that podcast if you new launch. Also, the Monday Meta is awesome. It's a stream show, too. Like, you can watch it on Martin's stream.
Yep. Twitch.tv/MartinYuza, 12 noon Pacific. So come check it out. And the best thing about that podcast, I'd say, is not the podcast, but the stream, because people come and they have questions and Martin just stays on. He keeps the stream going after we're done recording. And if you have Standard questions, and now Historic, because we're both pretty much diving into Historic, just show up to his stream and ask the questions. It's like a live Q&A after
it's
we
so
go
cool.
off
and you're
air.
Talking to a Hall of Famer who actually is, you know, like very, you know, he's playing a ton of Magic too. So he's going to be very fresh and have very good answers to the stuff you're saying. Because a lot of times you ask pros like, hey, how do you like this card in this deck in this format? They're like, you know what? I haven't played that format in a while because I haven't had to test for it. But for Standard, Martin's very prepared. So
yes,
very cool.
And
spot
that's why Historic
questions.
In 2 weeks, he's got to play Historic. So that's why he's jamming tons of Historic. And trust me, we're all in Slack together. So I'm like, what do I put in, you know, we'll talk about bannings later, but what do I put in Gruul instead of Burning Tree Emissary? Is that deck still good? What does the sideboard look like? And he's playing it all the time, both formats. And he always has stuff. He always has like crazy responses for me. So it's great.
Yeah. Awesome.
If you like Magic FM, there's other more casual content like Scry Me a River. That's Dennis Stranjak and Riley Knight.
Are we even going to give a shout out to the Scry Babies?
We'll shout out to Scrybabies. We'll throw them some scraps, you know, get them going.
We'll give scraps to the Scrybabies. Apparently the Scrybabies are beefing with us. So you know what? We're going to be beefing with the Scrybabies if that's the case.
Yeah. You know, they've done a lot of shouting, and wise man Sean Carter once said, the strong move quiet and the weak start riots. Mm. So we've been taking it very, very chill with the Scrybabies, but it is a great podcast, and I do strongly recommend you give Scry Me a River a listen. I think it's well worth it. It's fun. It's just a lot of hijinks.
Yeah, it's really fun. They just do fun stuff, and they answer questions. They take like user questions and they answer like what they would do in those situations. It's just a very lighthearted, fun cast. And then lastly, there's Ponder Podcast.
There's also Brainstorm Brewery.
Okay.
The Brainstorm Brewery podcast. So we have Ponder Podcast and Brainstorm Brewery podcast both on there. And both really good. Those are also Brainstorm has kind of a financial bent to it.
Yeah, they do a little like MTG Finance, right? Ponder's more news ish,
and just what's
and
going
just fun.
On.
Yeah, what's know, going on? It's, fun.
It's Topples, Jamie Topples, who has videos on channelfireball.com. It's TJ, who's kind of the host. Very, very. He's very charismatic. Very.
He's live.
And Melvin the Muppet,
who's an actual puppet who plays magic.
Yeah, which is awesome. A lot of fun, and then. I don't know how often James does it, but we do have Humans of Magic.
That's a really good podcast. It doesn't come up as often, but it's basically like deep dive on specific magic personalities, and you can kind of like learn everything about them from why they play magic, how did they got started, what things, you know, they're working towards, what things they've struggled with. It's like a very in-depth, gets into like really... real subjects, and it's the podcast tend to be pretty long too. Like he'll spend a lot of time with each guest, so that one's really cool too. Comes a little less often because it's kind of like a deep dive on a person.
Yep. But all really, really good stuff. And I love the fact that now, especially with we didn't shout out Limited Resources, did we?
Oh my god, Limited Resources doesn't need a shout out. There you go. Limited Resources is obviously like just one of the flagship CFP podcasts. You all know the podcast.
I mean, it's like, it's probably the flagship magic podcast.
So that one's hosted by Louise Scott Vargas and Marshall Sudcliffe. And if you want to, we kind of shouted it out, Mashian, when we were talking about constructed resources.
Yeah.
Yes.
I will say that Marshall Sutcliffe, who, if you don't listen to Limited Resources or watch magic coverage, maybe you don't know who Marshall is. That's your loss. He's wonderful. He has one of the best voices in magic.
Yeah, he's just this radio announcer, like buttery smooth voice.
And he's great. Marshall's a great guy. And he's got enough veritas, I'll call it, oomph, in this industry of content production and the magic industry. If you want to go to make, it's almost like the Godfather. When Luis wanted to put Constructed Resources back together, because Marshall's not in it, but Marshall is the Limited Resources guy, and he did make the first two versions of Constructed Resources. Luis went to Marshall, was like, hey, can I get your blessing to use the name?
Yeah, so Constructed Resources totally has their blessing for the podcast.
Yeah. And that wasn't a joke. Like if Marshall had been like, hey, you know what? I have it in the back of my mind to reboot it someday. I'd rather you didn't. We wouldn't call it Constructed Resources. That wasn't just lip service. So it's just funny because if you don't know Marshall, every magic player you listen to or watch who streams, they all know who Marshall is and they all respect Marshall. So it's just funny. But yeah, that's the story behind Constructed Resources. I have not listened to it yet. I cannot wait to listen to it.
Yeah, you're going to like it a lot. I thought it was really good. And their first episode, it was awesome. So... go check out, they're all on channelfireball.com. You can check them all out right there. So,
and while you're there, you can join CFB Pro, use the code Gabby.
Boom, baby.
Or do some shopping, use the code Gabby. That supports this podcast and all of Gabby's great content.
Love it. All right, so we have, there's been a lot of announcements this week. Where the first one, which was like the biggest one, was the changes to the changes to Magic OP. So I want to put like a big asterisk so that people know this. It is very complicated. People have a tough time parsing through all of it because there's a lot of information and it's like, and there's just like a lot of little things going in it. So we did our homework. We like broke everything down. We're going to try to give a shorter summary of how it works, but asterisk, we might not have all of this perfect because it really is very difficult to understand and parse. That said, we also talked to a bunch of our friends and people who are in the leagues to try to understand how they feel about it, how they think about it, what are some of the like pros and downsides of what's happened. And then so we also have our opinions in there too.
I will say very candidly, it's not just people. I read this thing. I read it twice. And then when we started before we went live, just for everyone out there, I was like, so Gabby, I got to tell you, I read this thing twice and I don't know, man, I'm just not getting it. And she's like, yeah, I don't think I understand it all the way either. Yeah. And I was like, oh, thank God. It's not just me.
Yeah, it's not just us who are out of touch. It's the children. but we really did spend a lot of time like breaking this down to give you all a summary of like kind of how this works in theory so that you can also, that's what you can internalize as like, this is how it works. And then we can talk about like maybe what's good and bad about it. All right, Mashi, I'm going to try to break this down real quick.
Yeah, so you got it.
I got it. And you can help, yeah. You can interject and you can help me as we explain this. Mm-hmm. So basically, there are two components to this. There are the Zendikar Rising split, and the splits are basically kind of like the new Pro Tours. And some of these changes, they're born out of the fact that we just can't really, there's no players tours. You can't do Grand Prix anymore. Like, we are living in a world of COVID. So Wizards came up with a system that would work online. And mm-hmm. that system is the Zendikar Rising split. So the Zendikar Rising split, hold on, let me pop this out. The Zendikar Rising split is essentially a Pro Tour. And then the way you qualify for it is through Arena. So you can mm-hmm. play ranked play. And then if you end up in the top 1,200, you will get qualified to play in a qualifier weekend. And that qualifier weekend will let you qualify for the championship. So the first area is going to be June, July, August is going to be the first qualifier. So if any of these months you make top 1,200, you'll get to play to try to qualify for the championship. And then there's another qualifier for all of September. And then there's another qualifier for all of October. And then from there, you'll be able, if you finish well enough, you'll be able to qualify to the championship. 7-match wins on day one let you play on day two. And then players who play on day two get 7-match wins or 2 losses. And then that's how you do it. All right. So that's the way the splits work. And so the splits are just going to keep, you know, like monthly, and it's going to just keep trying to like qualify and distill people from it. Then there's a second really big component, which is how the MPL and the Rivals League will work from now on. Let me pop that out real quick. So the MPL and the Rivals League are leagues that will play, they only play within themselves in the beginning. Mm-hmm. The MPL League is going to have 24 players, and then the Rivals League will have 48 players. Then the players will play in this thing called the League Weekends. The League Weekends are a total of 84 matches that happen over various weekends. And they only play within their league. So the MPL only plays with other MPLs in their League Weekend. And right. And Rivals only play with other Rival players in their League Weekends. These are Swiss, the way the structure works. And then depending on how well the players do within their league determines whether or not they get to play in this thing called the Rivals Gauntlet or the MPL Gauntlet. Or if they get kicked out.
Yeah.
So this is how you achieve the following things. If you are in the top 4 of MPL players within your like league during weekend play, you go straight to Worlds. If you, and then everybody else, like 13 to 24, so like the people who did worse than the MPL, go relegated to the Rivals League. And then the people who are 5 to 12, they get to play in the MPL Gauntlet, where they get to basically defend whether or not they get to stay in the MPL.
But the furthest they can drop is Rivals.
Is Rivals, right. So
if you're guaranteed Rivals.
Mm-hmm. So if you're in the MPL, you get demoted. You just get demoted to Rivals. You don't go back to being a challenger. Challenger is like what Mashi and I are and what most of the people here listening to Posket are. We just get to, yeah, flex. We just get to go and try to become a Rival. We can try to become an MPLer. And there's different routes for you to do that. But you mm-hmm. are not in the league necessarily. So then in the Rivals League, the top 4 Rivals qualify for Worlds. So yep. within that league, if you like do great, you go straight to Worlds and you're invited to the MPL as well. Then the people who finish 5 to 20 kind of get upgraded to play in the MPL Gauntlet. So they get to upgrade to take a chance to become an MPLer for the next season. Mm-hmm. The people who are 21 to 32 play in the Rivals Gauntlet, where they basically get to defend once again what they're doing, they could go to Worlds. Like they could do really well in that tournament. Rivals 33 to 36 get just invited back to the Rivals League. So you can't fall from the Rivals League, right? So you can try to do really well, but at its worst, you're still going to be in Rivals. And 37 to 48, you just get kicked.
You're a challenger. Everybody in the gauntlets, just in case it's not obvious here, everyone in the Rivals Gauntlet, everyone in the MPL Gauntlet, the very worst they can do is end up in the Rivals Gauntlet, in the Rivals League. No matter what, they're guaranteed to stay at Rivals and above. If you're playing the MPL Gauntlet, you can fight into the MPL, but you will drop no lower than Rivals. If you're in the Rivals League, you can try to get to Worlds. I don't know if there's no path to the MPL within the Rivals League, is there?
Yeah, there's if you finish in the top 5 to 20 lets you play in the MPL Gauntlet, and the MPL Gauntlet 5 to 12.
The Rivals. Rivals Gauntlet. The Rivals Gauntlet. Can't get to the MPL.
Yes, you
can. If you're in the Rivals Gauntlet. You can. Okay.
You can. In the Rivals Gauntlet, if you finish in the top 4, you go straight to Worlds and the next season MPL. So the top 4 finishers of Rivals get MPL and Worlds. It's a big game.
Not the league, just the gauntlet though.
That's the gauntlet.
That's the gauntlet.
That's what you get from the gauntlet. So then the next question is like, where do you get the new challengers? Because some people are going to fall off of Rivals, right? The new challengers are the people who win their splits. The top mm-hmm. 4 finishing challengers of their splits get invited into Rivals. And that's kind of like big picture what is happening here. It's just very, there's a lot of moving pieces. But that's the general idea. So Mashi, what do you think?
One of the other things I think,
go ahead.
One of the things we should circle back on, we talked about this before, is with the splits. Well, two things. One, I told you this, I was in a meeting at Riot with someone fairly high up at Riot. And I actually asked him, like, what is the deal with the splits thing? And he explained the reason for the terminology. And he's like, you know, to be honest, I wish we'd never used the term. We're stuck with it now. We can't get away from it. And then lo and behold, Magic just adopts it wholesale. Like we had the opportunity to have something better and we didn't do it. We just copied that. But okay, that's one thing. But
yeah.
Part two is the split championships, Rivals and MPL players, they can win money and a substantial amount of money, but in terms of actual like success, they don't have a dog in the hunt. Challengers can make it into Rivals through the split championship, but all of the points for Rivals players and MPLers for staying in the MPL or staying in Rivals, you can't accrue those inside the splits. So that's not, it's all league play for them. And so they have a little bit less incentive. Now the money's there. I don't want to take away from that, but there's a little bit less incentive in terms of the need to fight for your spot in the splits because you can win a split and get demoted out of Rivals.
Yeah. And that I think is like, that's really weird to me because
it's counterintuitive.
What's going to end up happening is someone out there, like you could win, someone in the MPL could win all the splits, do bad in the weekend league play, and then just fall to Rivals. And so you'll mm-hmm. have the split winner, which is essentially kind of like a pro tour champion that could just get delegated to Rivals if they do badly in their league play. And they're mm-hmm. and then subsequently potentially their gauntlet if they even make it to that. So that's weird, have right? That.
We call him Eli Loveman. So
yeah,
it's already happened.
It's true.
It's already happened. It's already happened.
Yeah.
We already know it.
But that's so then basically the splits ends up being really good way for like the top 4 finishing challengers to get an invitation to Rivals, potentially more stuff. But And I am not trying to minimize the fact that they are playing for a big prize pool. It's $250,000 for each split. Mm-hmm. That said, it does feel really weird to me that the incentives make it so that the proest of the players, the MPLers, don't really have a super good incentive to try their best for this tournament, where this is supposed to be the tournament. Like this is supposed to be like the exciting one. And I guess you can make the argument that like maybe the gauntlet is a super exciting one, but there's only one of those gauntlets. And then the weekend mm-hmm. play is kind of suffers, I think, from the same problem that the MPL had in general, which is when they were playing on the weekends and people didn't really care.
That's the big thing, is we've had splits before and nobody cared.
Yeah.
Like, actually, nobody watched. Nobody cared. There was big stuff. Like, you could... Wasn't the prize, like, if you won your split or whatever, you got into day two automatically for these tournaments? So the EV, the money on the line was pretty substantial.
I've said this before. I think I've said it on the podcast even. But I think the biggest tragedy with the MPL is that the way it was structured and then the way that it was marketed, it... The things that the players were playing for were really meaningful, really valuable, and worth a lot. And it just did not come across that way, which meant that people didn't care about their weekly, like their weekend plays. And it was really mm-hmm. high production value. It was really well made, but people didn't care. And that's kind of what I worry is going to happen here too with playing on the league weekends. Like when the players are trying to survive to stay in the MPL and or not fall into or upgrade into the MPL from mm-hmm. rivals.
Fight their way in.
Yeah, fight their win. I kind of worry that we might run into the same thing where it's so convoluted that it's really hard to follow what's at stake and what they're fighting for. Because we read this like 3-4 times, I talked about this with multiple people. We talked about this for like an hour before the podcast and we're still like, oh, okay, well, so hold on. From here, you can jump there, but not here. And this is how you get to Worlds, but not there. And the more complicated a system is, the harder it is for people to get invested and follow it.
Yeah. I would say for the last round of splits and for something this complicated and convoluted, they need to really post-produce this stuff. Because that's what they didn't do. There was a great polish on it, but they didn't post-produce it. There were bad games. It's like, this isn't live. You don't need... You can speed up the bad games. You can focus on the good ones. You don't want to see someone get mana screwed.
But it wasn't even post-production, Mosh. It was... Part of the problem was that people were playing for buys, and the buys were really valuable, but like... How exciting is it for me to tell you, like, it's what's more compelling? I'm playing for $1 million. Wow, that sounds really cool. Versus I'm playing for, or like before, I'm playing for platinum because you knew what that meant. Versus mm-hmm. I'm playing for a buy in the next tournament. And maybe the next tournament actually like getting a buy into it was sick because it was, but people just didn't care about that.
Well, and that's the second element. You need post-production and you need a good narrator. You need someone who's explaining like, okay, so Gabby's playing for this buy. That buy is worth $20,000. This split, you know, this match is $20,000 in equity on the line for Gabby's parts. That's a
compelling story.
You need someone to spoon feed it. I mean, I can't figure it out. You know, it's just like I'm reading all this stuff. Like I can't tell who goes where and what.
You work for CFP events. Like,
yeah. This is what we did. And I was reading this and I was like, how can this be happening?
Yeah. You know? So the other thing that's really weird about this that we haven't touched yet is the way the math works on these leagues. If you are in mm-hmm. the MPL, you are less likely to be in the MPL than someone in the Rivals League is. Because to stay in the MPL, you have to do so well. Versus the people in the Rivals League there's a lot more turnover in the MPL than in the Rivals League. So and we were a little bit talking about this before the podcast. I think we kind of disagree on this, but I think it's so mm-hmm. much worse to have so much turnover in the MPL because I think in the MPL, you want to have the big storylines, the pro players who you know and love and you're rooting for. And then I think it's more exciting to have more turnover in the challengers who are the people who are out here like trying to prove a point, trying to show that they're part of this, trying to show that they've earned their spot. But right now you're just going to have people getting kicked out of the MPL all the time. And I think that part's really weird.
I think it's great. I think it's a compelling storyline. It makes those matches that we're watching for most of the MPL really, really matter. And frankly, like, and maybe this is just my own, and it's not, this is nothing against, look, I mean, you know, Team CFP and who my friends are. So it's nothing against people that are currently in the NPL. It isn't because I have plenty of friends in the NPL, but it hasn't changed at all. It's gotten stale. Like I don't feel compelled.
No, hold on. That's not fair.
Lines that currently exist.
The MPL hasn't changed because they've changed the system so many times. They've grandfathered the people in the MPL like 3 times mm-hmm. over. So yeah. That's not quite fair.
I'm not holding it against them. I'm saying I now have attrition. Like I want to see turnover in the MPL now.
Sure.
Or at least feel like the people in the MPL are playing for something. Because I certainly haven't felt that way in years.
That's true.
They're just in there. And that maybe that's what's driving my desire to watch. And I just think it's better TV. It's better. The more these matches matter, the better the TV is. And when you have members of the NPL who are fighting to stay in the NPL, now again, this isn't my life, and I you know, I'm not trying to make life harder for them, but just as a viewer, I think it's just, it's way more compelling. And when you're selling the dream, you want challengers to say, I can fight my way to rivals, and from rivals, I can fight my way into the NPL. And the more the blockers are in place for the NPL, the harder living that dream is. I mean, what Wizards of the Coast wants to see, they want to see Gabby Sparks rise up through Challenger, get to Rivals, and make it to the NPL. Because that could be you. That could be everybody listening to this podcast. It literally was you in this example. And I think that's the dream that Wizards wants to sell. That was a dream they used to sell once upon a time for the Pro Tour. Mm-hmm. I do not think that dream is part of what is at play in professional Magic today.
Sure. I like the way you argued for that. Like, I think that makes me feel more okay with it. I still don't love it. I think it's still really weird that your reward for getting in the NPL is like you have to like fight tooth and nail to stay on it, because I'm not saying like just, oh yeah, once they get there, make them coast. Like, of course, I'm not saying that, but mm-hmm. It does seem really weird to me that you're gonna like people in the NPL is like, this person's out and this person's out, and this person's out, and suddenly like you're like, I don't even know who's in the NPL because there's just been so much turnover. That said, I haven't seen it play out, so obviously it could be sweet. Like, maybe this is what it.
How much of the NPL can you name right now?
I'd do so badly. I remember there was a time, even with the original NPL, when I was like trying to go around naming people, and I could name like half of them.
Would you call the NPL a success right now?
No, I think the NPL was a huge failure. And I mean, I think maybe it's salvageable, but I think generally speaking. I mean, I know there were a lot of outside factors. I know like COVID doesn't help all this stuff, but I think just generally speaking, the NPL was a really good idea that I don't think was executed properly. And I think now it's just also feels like it might have people like just don't take it seriously. Like, I think a lot of people, like the people in the NPL will probably argue for it. But I think if you talk to the majority of people who are outside of the NPL and who just care about competitive Magic, they just feel like the whole system got incinerated for no reason.
I allude to this, but my personal belief here is you just burn it all to the ground. Start at square one. There's no NPL. There's no Rivals. Wizards takes whatever time they need, you know, a month, or I mean, I don't think it would take that much time, but to design a completely new system without any ties to the past. Because I look at this and I really feel like they're trying to appease two crowds. Like, I don't know what Wizards is trying to incentivize. Like, what's the dream now? Is the dream to be a pro player? To because it used to be you win a PTQ, you get on the Pro Tour, you know, play Magic, see the world. That's the dream, right? That's what I watched Luis do, right? That was such a dream. And now there's like kind of a mixed message where it's like, we have a content creator program. We talked about that. Stream, make all your full-time job now is streaming. That's what we want to incentivize, that we want big-time streamers, and we cut these huge contracts for the NPL and force them to stream. But guess what? the top Magic streamers are not in the NPL, and the NPL players are not the top Magic streamers. So there's two environments here, and I just want to know, like, what does Wizards really want? You want to be an esport? Maybe that means more streaming. And I feel like they're trying to find this balance of like, well, we're an esport, so we have to push streaming, but that's not what the traditional old guard of top level Magic professional play is, right? And I feel like there's this, like, this weird way they're trying to straddle both worlds. And I think that maybe you burn it all to the ground, say, hey guys, gals, non-binary players, everybody, here's what we're gonna do. We're burning everything to the ground. All the contracts expire December 31st. They're gone. If you want to get into the NPL for 2021, or, you know, get into whatever we're going to call it, and the Rivals, all that, here's the roadmap from now until the end of the year. Everybody's at square one. Nobody has an advantage. We're all at the start line right now. I think that would be wonderful. And you'd have to have a cogent 3 to 5 year plan, I think, right? Like, hey, we're going to guarantee the system input. You know, with the caveat, I mean, of course, if we did that right now, no live play. I think you just got to do this. It's all digital. Sorry. You know, what are we supposed to do? There's a pandemic.
Yeah.
I would love to see that, though. I think that would, I don't know. I would love to see that.
I mean, I agree. I don't know if like just totally incinerating everything and then start, like, because I think the concept of it is not bad. The concept of there's this league, it's the Magic Pro League. These are the pro players. Because before, the idea of what a pro player was really nebulous too. Like, there were people out there calling themselves pro players who weren't platinum, or like, was gold pro? Was silver pro? Was, You know, that wasn't clear. That wasn't ever really clear. So I think this at least does provide this this idea that, like, hey, if you're in the Rivals League, you're on your way to becoming a pro. And if you're in the Magic Pro League, then you're definitely like the big leagues. Mm-hmm. The thing that just gets me is it cannot be this complicated. I cannot express how long we spent trying to understand the system to make sure that we could explain it to people listening to the podcast. And it's like, if we had to do all that work, like, who's just reading this for fun? No one's going to read this for fun. Yeah. The people who care about it, obviously. And I will say this, just to like benefit of the doubt. This only gets super complicated if you're either in Rivals or the mm-hmm. Magic Pro League, at which point you are invested because this is like your work, or you can make a lot of money or lose a lot of money by doing this. So you are going to pay attention to how it works. But that before, we had a system before that people understood generally that, yes, there were complications like, can I defer an invite, or did this tournament count for this other thing? But that didn't confuse from the overall message that people knew how the Magic players became professional Magic players and what platinum and gold and silver and all that stuff did.
It was all out there.
And it was all out there, and people understood it. And you didn't need a flowchart to explain all of this. And we're out here like,
I agree.
Okay, hold on. So if you're in between this and this, you make it here. And if you're here, oh yeah, you can go straight to Worlds, but you can't fall here. And then you're just like doing that gif of like the woman looking at math on the walls, like doing all these equations. Like, I feel like that's what looking at this looks like. And I just don't think that's acceptable.
Completely. I agree. It feels like, and I'm not saying this would happen, but it feels like someone needlessly injected complexity into this whole structure. It doesn't make any, like, it doesn't, now I don't know, I haven't done any of the math on it, but it just feels like it doesn't need to be this complex. I agree.
It's just too much. And the part of the reason that it's so complex is because there's a lot of ways people can go from one place to another place. Like the way this is set up, you can have challengers that go straight to Worlds, you can have challengers that go straight to the MPL, and you can have MPLers that fall to Rivals. Like there's a lot of different paths, but if they just made it simpler and you just knew that it needed to take you 2 years to get to the MPL because you first had to make it to Rivals and then you had to make it to the MPL, that would just like clear up so much of this confusion, right? I think by trying to make it like, oh, there's these exciting changes that can happen, it just also becomes impossible to decipher.
And historically, when there were top things like Worlds or Nationals or any of those things, there were no qualifications required. It was an open to the public tournament. If you wanted to get to Nats, you played in regionals, okay? But everyone could play in that. And if you wanted to get to Worlds, you had to play in Nats. And everybody you had to get there through regionals. But having more tournaments that are open to the public rather than by invite only through success at Rivals or through the MPL is a way that you solve a lot of these other layerings of who gets what invite directly to here, you know, just open it to the public. And there's a way that I don't want to say it advantages MPL or Rivals players because clearly it doesn't, but those are the best players in the world. So if there's an open tournament, they're at an advantage. They're the best players in the world. So I don't know. I just think it's needlessly complex. I think there's a world where you make it simpler and you know, I don't want to be, you know, back in my day, but it was simpler and it made a lot more sense. And the other reason I think burning it to the ground makes so much sense to me is because I can't help but feel ever since the MPL launched, ever since Wizards changed its OP system and launched the MPL, that they've just been on their back foot reacting. And this system is another reaction. If they just burned it to the ground and started with ground zero, they could stop being reactive and start being proactive. Design the system they want. Because I every time I feel like, there's like, here's what we want to accomplish, but here's what we have to like still answer because of these legacy issues.
Yeah, there's a lot of like baggage, I think is the word we're looking for. There's baggage that comes from the previous systems. Exactly. And I think that is also like making some of this a little bit more cloudy and difficult. I will say, like, yes, we've criticized this a lot. I think there's a lot to criticize here. I do think there should be some credit given to Wizards for the fact that they did revamp the system so that it's a system that works under the world of COVID, because, you know, they could have just done nothing. And I'm not saying that was a good option for them. Obviously, like, this is how people get excited about playing Magic. This is like where the competitive aspect of Magic comes in, but they didn't have to do this whole thing. So I do appreciate that they are trying to adjust for a really kind of crappy situation. We are living in a worldwide pandemic, and this is a way that a lot of people will have an outlet to like play competitive Magic. That said, it just feels like it just needs to, we just need something different. This just not going to do it.
Yeah. I will say, I mean, kind of part and parcel with that, I've been playing a ton of Arena, and there are things like the Arena Open and great tournaments and offerings on Arena, in my opinion. I mean, if you're diehard Moto, or if you're cubing, it's not maybe for you, but I think there's a lot of great competitive Magic and competitive Magic that compels me, that I've actually like entered into and not done very well at, but you know, so I think those options are out there, and particularly with Arena, I think they've done a great job really offering a bunch of stuff, pushing Historic now. And I'm very complimentary of that product. And I played Moto for years. I mean, I have not played Moto in years, but I played it for 10 years. You know, I was on Moto all the time, and I'm much happier on Arena for whatever it's worth.
Whew. All right. So that is our breakdown of the, wow.
That is the OP breakdown.
That was our OP breakdown. It was a lot, but I hope that people listening at home will have a more concise idea and understanding of like how this works, because that's what we wanted to do in the podcast, and maybe what some of the upsides and downsides are, so that you can then, you know, form your own opinion when you actually see how the league play works and how coverage of the events go. Then maybe you'll have a better idea of like how it all interacts with each other.
Yep.
So there is another really big announcement.
Yeah, we had a bunch of bannings.
Yeah. Do you want to tell us about the bannings?
So the banner restriction announcement came out on Monday. They happened on Monday, and we knew that this was coming, and we knew it was basically coming for, you know, a bunch of formats, but not Standard. They told us not, you know, it's going to be Pioneer, Historic, Pop, or whatever. So you know, in Historic, there were some bands that just weren't a surprise, right? Because Agent of Treachery, Winona Joyner of Forces, and Fires of Invention were on the suspended list, which is the, hey, we're looking at, you know, banning these. Then they got upgraded or downgraded, I'm not sure what the right term is, to banned. So they're out now. But two other cards also hit the chopping block. One was Nexus of Fate, which is 2 blue 5 for an instant. Take an extra turn after this one. If Nexus of Fate would be put into a graveyard from anywhere, reveal Nexus of Fate and shuffle it into its owner's library instead. And the other was Burning Tree Emissary, which is 2 gruel hybrid. You know, you can play any combination of green and red. For a 2/2 human shaman, and when she enters the battlefield, pardon me, add 1 red and 1 green to your mana pool. And that was a little bit more of a surprise. So Nexus of Fate, I mean, I don't know what you want to say about that card. Like, I don't really candidly think it ever should have been printed. Like, cards like this need to exile themselves. The fact that there's like this replayability, particularly that you don't even have to get it out of your graveyard, it's already in your library, you need to find it again, I think meant like this card, I don't know, I don't think this card ever should have been printed. So
yeah,
Burning Tree Emissary, much more fair in my opinion. Sorry, go ahead.
I have some problems with a Historic ban. it's some stuff that maybe so for all the bans, for listeners who know, I either play some of these formats, so I have like a pretty good opinion on like the bans, or I went and talked to players who play the formats a lot to understand how they felt about the bans. And the thing that's weird about Historic is, first of all, and this is just like a bone I have to pick with a stupid suspended issue, yeah, I don't get it. It doesn't make sense to me. Because here we see that Nexus of Fate doesn't say it's suspended. Nexus of Fate went straight from suspended to banned. So what is the point of having suspended? If you have these cards that get like it's like a baby ban, right? They get suspended, it's a baby ban, and then they get actual ban. But then there's all these cards that go from like Nexus of Fate, which should have gotten suspended to eventually ban, just go straight to ban. It's like, what is the point of this middle ground? Also,
I agree.
Unbans exist. So like, I think Wizards could do something like say, hey, because Historic is only a digital format, we are going to be much more aggressive with bans and unbans, because it's easy. They can just hand out wild cards, not...
Agreed.
No problem.
I'm with you.
Right?
Yep.
So why do you have this like middle spot where cards get suspended if you have cards that are just jumping through? I just don't get it. I don't understand, Vashi.
I agree.
It's so frustrating.
I don't... It's like they've seen enough. Why waste time? But
I don't get it.
We'd all seen enough with Winota. And yet she made it on the suspended list before she got banned. It was very clear she was too overpowered for the format. So you I think you are 100% right, Gabby. There's no question that you're right.
It's so weird to me. I just don't get it. And then the other thing too is when I saw this announcement, I was like, because I saw there were like 7 cards that got banned, but it was not new news. Agent of Treachery we knew was suspended and went to ban. Like that was like, oh, okay, that's nothing. Same for Winota, same for Fires of Invention. And it almost clutters the announcement so that it makes it look like, oh my God, there's all this stuff. What happened? And then you read it again. You're like, oh, actually, this was just like, this doesn't even change anything. So that's the other thing I do not like about the way that historic bans are being handled. The other thing too is that, as I understand, the reason that Gruul was doing well was because Gruul was a deck that could fight Nexus of Fate. So it's kind of strange to me to ban a card from Gruul if part of the reason that Gruul had a pretty decent win rate was because it was an answer to Nexus of Fate, a deck that is now getting nerfed.
So I don't know. I jammed a bunch of games with Gruul leading up before this ban, and I never got to play against Nexus of Fate. I ended up playing against a lot of Golos, Field of the Dead decks. So I can't answer that. I think it's a great deck. It's pretty awesome. And you can steal wins from any matchup. And the nice thing is, if you just want to take a quick break, like you want to take a little 10-minute break, you can probably jam
one game.
A whole match of historic.
A whole match.
Yeah, it's quick. Trust me, Gruul. Because you got to mulligan extremely aggressively with the deck, in my opinion. But yeah, I don't know if it was tailor-made for that matchup or not. I will say it beats a lot of things. So
yeah, I do think that an argument against BTE is that it's kind of like I guess a cheese card. Like you it can lead to some unfun games where you go turn 2 BTE into BTE into BTE into play my other thing, and you're like, well, I'm dead, and you just pick up your card. So if you want to have less games like that, sure. It just did seem strange to me to ban the card of it, because it's not even like a super mega crucial card to red green. Like red green can just still be a deck without Burning Tree Emissary. So it does seem kind of strange to me to ban a card that made this deck that was good against a deck that now you banned, but it also doesn't it doesn't make or break anything, right? It doesn't completely punish Gruul. They can clearly just keep on playing without BTE and they'll be fine.
The biggest issue is the way you maximize value with BTE was, you know, if you got one, even if you just got one out, you were one turn closer to dropping a cleave. That was the big thing.
Yeah, like that next also turn, matters, totally.
If you got the body out there the next turn, you're Ember Cleaving something. And normally, once Cleave hits, it's all over. Like, you know, if you're not dead that turn, you're dead the next turn. So yeah. I think that was the biggest danger with BTE.
The Nexus of Fate ban I'm all for. I think Nexus leads to just these really unfun games and this horrible play pattern of just you sitting and watching your opponent take turns for forever while you kind of F6. And yeah, so I'm all for this. Like, I am fine with the fact that it got banned. I still just don't really understand why suspended exists, but that's different axe to grind. So that's the historic ban.
That's historic. So Pioneer was the one that there's tons and tons of, I think, clamor over the lack of bannings in Pioneer and frankly, the action taken, which was nothing was banned, but Oath of Nissa was unbanned. Oath of Nissa, 1 green for legendary enchantment. When Oath of Nissa enters the battlefield, look at the top 3 cards of your library. You may reveal a creature, land, or planeswalker card from among them and put it into your hand. Put the rest in the bottom of your library in any order. You may spend mana as though it were mana of any color to cast planeswalker spells. Okay, this is a format that's dominated by combo, right? It's like all Inverter and Lotus Breach. And it's like, what is it? We have all these crazy combos. I think people were calling for some kind of something to hit Inverter pretty strongly. And the problem with this action is what it feels like is someone said, oh, you've got all the, oh man, Inverter's going nuts. And oh my gosh, Lotus Breach out everywhere. You know what? Let's unban Oath of Nissa. Let's throw that. It's like, what are you doing, you guys? Just, you know, sometimes it's like doing nothing would have just been better, right? Did you actually look at this problem and go, Oath of Nissa back in, that'll change everything.
Yeah, I feel the exact same way. I am very unhappy about the Pioneer bans because, well, unbans, I guess there weren't any bans.
Yeah.
Bans or lack thereof. Yes.
Yes.
And it's so rough because you know, so there's like an accompanying article that gets written by Wizards where they talk about like why they did or didn't ban anything. And so they talk about how they saw the win percentages of Lotus Breach and of Inverter. And they didn't feel like those win percentages were like good enough to merit the bans. I think there's a really, really big like flaw in that thinking. And it's that those two decks, because they're combo decks and they're kind of they're decks that have kind of complicated play patterns because they have a lot of intricacies or weird card interactions. It makes it so that the players who are very good with those decks have much, much better win percentages. But because there's a bunch of people playing it and there's a bunch of, you know, not as experienced players playing the deck, it brings all of the win percentages down. So that means that the very experienced players are out there with these two decks just absolutely crushing with an insane win percentage. And then all the other players who are bringing the percentage down make it look like the deck's not a problem when the deck really is a problem.
I also think there's something to be said for the opportunity cost of having the decks in the format, which is to say they are chasing other strategies and other decks out. And that makes like one of the things we take into account, or that I believe should be taken into account when it's the health of the format, isn't just is there a dominant deck, but how much are different cards in the format warping things. Like the great example of Santa right now is Teferi the Time Raveler, right? Like that Planeswalker is warping the format. It is, you know, it's so difficult to get anything to stick because of Time Raveler. Like, you know, and even though, you know, Teferi himself is not necessarily winning the game, there's a palpable effect. Like, I think the format would change drastically if he was banned. I think the same thing with Inverter and Breach, where it's like, if you start neutering those decks, you will see other decks and maybe multiple other decks rise to prominence. And that's a healthier format for
everyone. Yeah. I mean, a good example based on what you're saying right now is actually very seen. It's very obvious in people's sideboards because these are combo decks that are so prevalent that you can't afford not to have the hate cards that you want against these decks. So if you know you're going to be playing against Lotus Breach, you need a Damping Sphere in your decks. And maybe like Damping Sphere sucks in your deck, like just be honest, but you need to have it in there because you cannot take it to a tournament and not be prepared to see that deck. Or, you know, people are trying to figure out ways to fight against Inverter and they'll do things like Cranial or Surgical Extraction and things like that. But typically, like one of the ways that people can interact in these formats is with cards like Thoughtseize, right? But if you Thoughtseize one of their cards, put it in the yard, and then they invert for it, you put it in their deck. So like that's really weird. And that's a really feel bad situation for a newer player. And I think Pioneer is supposed to be kind of a format that's like, huh, okay, so you graduated from Standard, you're playing your Standard decks, and now you're getting into this more kind of Eternal format, right? And I think making it so like all your sideboards have to come prepared against all these combo decks. And do you want combo decks to be that big of a percentage?
No,
of that just seems don't. That seems bad.
It's
to
not
me,
good magic. Right? It's not good magic. Yeah. And I mean, can I just tell you like what I think is really going on here? There's a major historic event coming up. R&D's only got so many people. I think they got to focus on Standard and focus on historic, and they'll get to Pioneer. But Pioneer, I don't know how, it's not even firing online right now.
No, the queues aren't even firing.
Yeah. So maybe they're just saying like, it's not our priority right now. We got to look at these other formats. We'll come back to it. I hope they do. We probably won't have time to get to it, but there was a State of the Game announcement that teased Pioneer Masters. And by the time Pioneer Masters hits, there's going to be, there has to be some serious pruning in that format. So dollars to donuts by the end of the year, there's going to be some serious changes to Pioneer. I think that maybe they didn't have the time to put into it just yet.
It's possible. I guess the other question is just like, what is even Oath of Nissa going to do in this format? Like one of the last places it got played in was Kethi's Combo, which is another combo deck. Like, what is this making
I
better?
I don't get it. Yeah.
Five-color Niv-Mizzet deck, like, woo.
Yeah. I am totally lost as to why. Like, that's what mystifies me. It's like, you look at this thing and maybe you see a train wreck and you go, I've got the solution.
Yeah,
it's like,
just baby, don't worry. Oath of Nissa is coming to save us.
Oath of Nissa is coming back. You know, so, all right. Enough said on that. Modern also had a banning, which I think was long overdue. This was one that I think a lot of people were waiting for a long time. Arkham's Astrolabe banned in Modern. Arkham's Astrolabe, you can play it for one snow mana. So it's just a snow-covered land. And when Arkham's Astrolabe enters the battlefield, draw a card. And then for one generic, you can tap, add one mana of any color. tap into AdWord Manager. Right? Yeah. It mana filters for you.
So one of the reasons that Astrolabe was like such a problem was because it made mana so much easier in like Sultai decks, for example. And it also mm-hmm. made all your snow permanents, like things like Ice Fang Coatl, it made it always be online. And yep. and it was so reliable, and it let you be so greedy on your mana, and it let you just like get the most out of your cards to the point where it was like almost silly to not be playing that, because you could be so greedy and you could play so many like such good card mm-hmm. quality without ever really getting punished. And then the other thing that was like really frustrating about it is because this deck played all snow lands, if you were playing any other deck in Modern, you had to be playing snow lands, or you would actually give up meaningful information about the fact that you weren't playing snow lands. So mm-hmm. it forced everybody into playing snow, which is pretty stupid, I think. And this mm-hmm. this might be a smaller thing, but you know, I heard Luis make this point, and I agreed with him so much. One of the coolest things about Magic is the lands. There's so many lands that have been printed through so many years, and it is one of the ways that people like express themselves. They love mm-hmm. talking. There's lands power rankings. People love that stuff. But then you have this format where people are forced essentially to play snow for no real reason other than the fact that everyone's playing snow. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
It's really funny too, because you get cards like this in a format. Modern is a powerhouse format, and this is such an innocuous looking card, and here it is, not just banned, but a banning that everyone's like, oh my gosh, about time. And what does it do? It's just one mana comes into play, draw a card, and then one generic tap it, tab one mana, and cut in your mana pool. Totally innocuous looking, but you know, still in Modern, banned, and rightfully so.
Yeah.
All right, our final two bannings come in Pauper Expedition Map, which is a one generic artifact, and then you can tap to sacrifice the Expedition Map to search your library for a land card, reveal it, and put it into your hand. And Mystic Sanctuary, which was the one card that we were talking about today that I actually legitimately had to go look up, because I was like, I don't even know what this card does. It is a non-basic land that counts as an island. You can tap to add blue to your mana pool. When Mystic Sanctuary enters the battlefield tapped, unless you control three or more other islands, so it doesn't count itself, although the next one will count this one. When Mystic Sanctuary enters the battlefield untapped, you may put target instant or sorcery card from your graveyard on top of your library. So you can, you know, once you get three islands plus this out, you start to recur instants and sorceries on the top of your library.
Yeah, so the Expedition Map one is not super surprising. People, I think, have been asking mm-hmm. for a ban from Tron in Pauper for a while.
Yep.
And this ban doesn't mean that Tron is unplayable. It just makes it more difficult to assemble Tron.
Slows it down.
Yeah, sure. And the Pauper deck, the Pauper Tron deck was never really all... Like, it's unlike the Modern Tron deck, which was every single turn, like, super combo-y. Like, every single turn is about trying to assemble Tron. The Pauper Tron deck can sometimes be more like... Oh, if I assemble Tron, that's great. But in the meantime, I'm going to do these other things.
Yeah.
So it was less oppressive in that sense. And just, you know, hosing it a little bit. I get it. People hate Tron. And this is a fine card to go. Like, it's not mm-hmm. a huge deal. And I don't think it's also a tremendous loss. Mystic Sanctuary is kind of weird because... There was no real way to fetch it in the format, and fetches are, because it is an actual basic island, fetches were one of mm-hmm. the ways where Mystic Sanctuary is annoying, because you can just kind of like get into this like very repetitive like play pattern where you're play my spell, get the spell back, play the Mystic Sanctuary, get it back, play mm-hmm. it again. But there are a lot of blink effects and things like that in Modern.
Oh, okay.
Or in Pauper,
okay.
Excuse me.
In the Pauper? Yeah, Pauper, mm-hmm. yeah.
Like Ghostly Flicker and stuff like that. So that did make that card be kind of stupid. Like, it's kind of mm-hmm. the card is just really weird, honestly. I can't believe this card exists. And the fact that it's a basic island is just really weird to me.
I think it's a funnish looking card, but I'm sure that there was some route to abuse, which you can see present there. So, all right, well, you know, we're up on time here. So there was a state of the game announcement. Did you want to cover anything from that, Gabby?
No, real quick, I think given that we're at a pretty good stopping point, are next week going to have a special guest. Ooh,
yeah.
We're going to have Jana Amari, and we're excited to have her on. I've done some YouTube shows with her before. We've done a YouTube like it was like a game show, and she was awesome on there, and we'll be talking about streaming and some other stuff, so we have that to look forward to. We'll see if maybe we fit some of the stuff from the state of the game in that episode, but yeah, we just had so much to talk about between bans and honestly the updates to the Magic Pro League and like the future of Magic that I just think that we can just skip over this.
I think that's good too. So yeah, definitely. We have Jana Amari on next week. I've never met her. I don't know Jana, but
she's super
excited to have her on. Yeah. She's, if you want to find her on Twitter, give her a follow. She's Jana Banana and she's at Jana Amari Chan on Twitter. So give her a follow. She's pretty active on there and she's a streamer too, right? So she, yeah, you can follow her stream. I don't actually, bad host, I don't have her stream channel.
It's okay. You'll do your homework before next week.
I will do it before next week. So that does it for this week. Definitely tune in next week when we have Jana, a special guest, on. We'll get to talk to her about streaming, among other things. Thank you so much for hanging out with us for this hour. It's been a blast. I hope we didn't cross too many I's, and I'm sure that all of you will hold us accountable and correct any mistakes we made for the NPL and Rivals.
I'm sure we did.
Yeah, so please, all the feedback is always wonderful. Thank you very, very much. Until next week, I am the guy on the left, Mashi Scanlon, at Mashi Scanlon. She is Gabby Spartz, at Gabby Spartz. You can find her at twitch.tv/GabbySparks. You can find this podcast on Twitter at Magic FM Podcast. Of course, we post the video. If you're listening to us in the podcast, watch the video. It's on channelfireball.com or on youtube.com/channelfireball. Trust me, there's a lot of facial expressions. We're both gesticulators, so it's a good time to check it out. If you're listening to the podcast, give it a subscribe. Remember, check out Channel Fireball, our sponsor. Use that code Gabby, G-A-B-Y. Every purchase you make, or if you join CFP Pro, all of that goes to support Gabby and all of her wonderful content, including this podcast. Until next week, everyone, when we'll be back with Jana Amari, be wonderful to yourselves, be wonderful to each other.
Bye-bye.